The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 3rd, 2018.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine D. Holt, and I'm your host. And with me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, and my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning.
I want to tell everybody a secret. Ken's name is Kenneth Edward Norton. Well, welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces. I have two special guests in the studio with me. I have one of my favorite people here, Lisa Maldonado, who is a labor relations representative for the California Nurses Association. And it's so funny, I went on her Facebook and I found this wonderful, she described herself this way. I don't know if I agree with some of it, but this is the way she says it. She's an attorney, she's a union organizer, she's a thug, she's a troublemaker, she's a boat rocker. Well, I want to find out about that boat rocker. She's a revolutionary and a nice Mexican girl, all in one. Well, I want to welcome Lisa Maldonado. And also joining me in the studio is another favorite person, a woman that I met during, when she was organizing the Bicycle Coalition. I was on the Community Advisory Board, and we were both, I believe, appointed by Councilwoman Marcia Voss-Dupre. Barbara Moulton is a climate activist and volunteer and co-leader of Citizens Climate Lobby in Santa Rosa. And we're going to talk about some of the stuff that's going on around global warming, some of the denials, and some of the events that are also happening. I mean, there's a big summit that's going to be going on in San Francisco that we're going to talk a little bit about. And it's really exciting to find out what the grassroots is doing around climate change. Ken and I were driving down here, and I says, you know, Ken, you know, you got a bunch of thugs. That's why I don't like that Lisa used that word thug, but we got a bunch of thugs in Washington, D.C. who really don't care about us. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, they want to break the unions up. They want to break, they're denying climate. I mean, destroying all the information that we've gathered over the years. I mean, it's horrific. But you know something? That doesn't really matter as much as we think it does. What really matters is that people come together, that women stand up for the future of their children. And that is the most important thing. And that's why we do Women's Spaces. And I try to bring women on to encourage other women to get involved. I know it inspires me tremendously. I listen to their stories and hear the courage they had and how they became active. And I say to myself, just keep going, baby. Just keep going. Well, today is Labor Day. And as I do every year, I want to dedicate the show to my father, Solomon Holtz, who was a member of Mailers Union No. 9 in Los Angeles. But I want to add a little bit of more information about my dad. My dad was also an identical twin, and it was my Uncle Jack. And when my dad used to walk down the street with my Uncle Jack, we couldn't even tell the difference. I mean, my mother finally got them to cut their hair different, so we would know who was who. I mean, that's how it was. And they were both union members. They both fought. They were both part of the newspaper unions, and they both fought for years from the 30s on to maintain a union. And my father always said to me when I asked him, I said, Dad, how come the union's so important to you? And he said, Elaine, I never met a boss who would give you a raise without a struggle. And that's what the union's all about. They represent, they struggle for us. I mean, when you start doing research, when you really start doing research, at one time we had no labor laws. You know, we had no child laws. I mean, when you think of what, as human beings, and it's the grassroots. It's not the authorities that change things. It's the people when they come together and they say enough is enough and they stand up. Well, another person that I like to honor today is Ken's grandfather, Ralph Norton. He was also a union man, and it took a lot of courage. It took a lot of courage in the 30s and late 20s and early 30s to become a union member and to stand up. And it was interesting, as I was doing some history, what I found out is that most of the people that were involved in the labor movement, say of the 30s, were mostly immigrants. They were people who just had come over, who hadn't even become citizens, many of them. And they were the ones who led the way for an 8-hour day. They led the way for better health conditions, better safety conditions. You know, I think about that Triangle Fire, the only shop that wasn't unionized, and they could lock the doors on their women before they left. And so, therefore, when the fire broke out, the doors were locked, and the women couldn't get out. And that brings me to the next person that I'm honoring. You know, in 2020, I was at a meeting with Linda Hopkins, and we have formed a group to try to explore having our celebration for 2020, when we're going to celebrate 100 years since women have gotten the vote. What a struggle. You know, it's been a struggle to get the vote. It's been a struggle to maintain our own rights and our own ability to choose. And still in the labor market, I just got some information from the National Organization for Women, which is really stunning to me. Women make up 47% of the labor force and are the sole breadwinners in 40% of families with children. And yet the wage gap between working women and men persists in every occupation. I mean, I'll tell you something. I don't understand it. I have to scratch my head when I think women bring in life. You know, I'm going to become a great grandmother. My granddaughter-in-law, I guess that's what we call her, Amber, posted a picture of herself with my grandson with her full stomach. I mean, you know, we know Beyonce, she freed us all. She freed women. She freed our bodies. It was such a beautiful scene to see. Here's this beautiful woman with this baby inside of her. And I thought to myself, my God, we bring in life. You know, and here we are, the ones. We're second-class citizens. I do not understand it. If anybody can explain that to me, please email me at elaine@womenspaces.com. I'd even be happy to do an interview with you if you could tell me why women are second-class citizens. Anyway, what I decided, because we're coming into our 100th anniversary of getting the vote, I decided every show I want to honor one woman. One woman who helped pave the way for us. We are standing on the shoulders of many great people. People who fought and struggled and made a difference in our lives and the lives of many of them. And one of them is one of my favorite women, who was a woman who was the first labor secretary of the United States under Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And her name was Frances Perkins. And what was really interesting about Frances Perkins, she was a social worker, and she worked in the area where they had, it was called the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire in New York City. She happened to be coming by as the fire was raging and as they were trying to put it out, and saw women literally flipping out the windows. And she stood there in shock, and she said to herself, if ever I have a chance to do something for women and children in the area of labor, I will do it. Well, she really got that opportunity, because what happened was, is she got to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, appointed her as the first labor secretary of the United States. She brought in Social Security. She brought in child labor laws. She brought in safety laws and regulations. An amazing, amazing woman. So let's do a shout out for Frances Perkins. She's really one of my heroes, to be really honest with you. You know, before we had unions, before we even had Labor Day, people were working 16 to 20 hours a week. Children were working with no breaks. Some children would actually die on the job because they were so overworked and underfed. I mean, think about that. You know, think about that. Would you like to go back to that place? You know, would you like to see your child go to work and work like a slave and maybe not be fed or be locked in some room because nobody's going to let him out because they want to make sure that he's doing his 16 hours a day properly? I mean, the unions are one of the most important parts of our society. That's what, you know, everybody's talking. He says, oh, the middle class, you know, the middle class is disappearing. Well, who do you think made the middle class? It was the unions, because we got decent wages. We could send our children to school. We could do all these different things. You know, it wasn't just given to us. There was a struggle ahead. You know, in fact, it's really interesting. The song I'm going to play is a song when we take a musical break called Bed and Roses, and it's sung by Bobby McGee. Lindsay, what's the name here? About, yes, Bobby McGee. And the slogan Bread and Roses originated in a speech given by a woman by the name of Rose Schindemann. And a line in the speech, the worker must have bread, but she must have roses too, inspired the title of the poem. And then after the first publication in 1911, the poem was established again in July 1912 to be part of the union movement. It's really, really interesting. In fact, it was the Chicago Women's Trade Unionist who actually adopted that song. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take a break and we're going to listen to this song. Listen to it very closely. You know, what does it mean, I want bread and roses? No, to me it means I want to make sure that I have all my needs met, you know, to have shelter, to have food, you know, to have decent health care, you know. That's kind of the bread of life, you know, what we need to sustain ourselves. But the roses is, don't forget that there's still the beauty. There's still the beauty of the children in the beautiful parks that we create. There's still the beauty of the mountains, of the seas, of the beaches, all the beauty. That's roses, you know, to maintain that, to make sure we have good parks. Lisa Maldonado and I were talking about, before I take this break, I want to tell a little story. I went hiking on Sunday with Ken. We went up to Annandale Park. And the terrain was kind of mixed, I'll tell you. And, you know, I'm a 78-year-old woman. You know, I can't hike as well as I used to. Sometimes I think I'm still 16. But when you go on the train, on these hikes, you begin to see, especially when you have to climb little areas. And I freaked out at one point because I literally had to kind of climb up a hill with my hands because my legs would not stand straight. It was very shocking to me. But I was able to make it up the hill, and I caught my breath, and I was really relieved, and I hoped that there would not be any more incidents when all of a sudden we ran into a place where looked like it was almost impossible for us to get through. And we were kind of caught in it. You know, we had to move forward, but how are we going to move forward? And I became very frightened. And all of a sudden, I saw this young hand reach out, and I heard this voice say, "Let me help you." And all of a sudden, I looked, and there was a whole family there. There was a brother and a sister, a mother and a father, you know, and they're all talking, and they're all excited. You know, they're going to help this poor woman get across this terrain. And then all of a sudden, the sister, she climbs a rock and holds her hand out so I could get over this really very, very difficult spot. And then all of a sudden, the mother got involved. Make sure when she walks over here, she'll be okay. Well, they got me across. And I'll tell you, it was the most humbling moment of my experience on this planet because I was so vulnerable and so needy at that moment. And it just happened to be a Hispanic family. Now, I don't know if they had papers or not. They were just a family out in the park enjoying the day. They saw a troubled woman and they helped her. They didn't think, oh, she's a white woman. When I took his hand, I didn't think he was a Hispanic. You know, it just was people helping each other, human beings helping each other. And as I walked away and I looked back at this family, I couldn't help but think of the families on the borders the children are being pulled away from. I couldn't help but think of some of the discrimination that's going on around our Hispanic population here in California and across the United States. And I said to myself, I'm supposed to not like another human being? It doesn't make sense. We're here to love one another. And I was thinking, too, after I walked, I was thinking of the word love. What does it mean to love somebody? You know, there's all kinds of love. I mean, there's a difference between sexual love and child love, you know, a mother's love for a child. All these different areas of love are so different. But to me, what love really is just do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I'm sure when that mother saw me walking, she probably thought, oh my goodness, I hope if I were in that kind of situation, that some family came and helped me. So I don't know who the family was. I don't know their names. I don't know anything about them. But whoever they are, I want to thank them from the bottom of my heart for helping me and for showing me once again that the most important thing is our hearts and our willingness to help one another. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and the song I'm going, I get chills when I think about what happened to me. We're going to take a musical break, and I will be playing the song Bread and Roses, sung by Bobby McGee. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with Lisa Maldonado, who's working right now with the California Nurses Association.
As we come marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. Come marching, marching, we battle too for men, for they are women's children, and we mother them again. Our lives shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we come marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient song for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their drudging spirits knew. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we come marching, marching, we bring the greater days. For the rising of the women means the rising of the race. Drudge and idler, tend that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread and roses.
Oh, that song just gives me the chills, bread and roses, I love it. Well, for you folks just joining in, you are listening to KBBF 89.1 FM, Calistoga, Santa Rosa. I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of KBBF, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my guest, Lisa Maldonado. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Happy Labor Day, sister.
I can't believe it's another year, another Labor Day. I mean, I think we have to establish it right now. Every Labor Day, Lisa comes on and talks about labor and the history and everything.
It's yeah, I know you celebrate it. Workers every day, Elaine. So we're always celebrating the working class. So,
well, you know, before we start, I'd like to tell my listeners just a little bit about you. And it's so impressive. I mean, I've known you over the years, and I've seen you moving and doing all kinds of different things. And I just want to say thank you. Lisa Maldonado was also the field director for Service Employees International, SEIU, Local 1021, and local SEIU, local, wait, just I.
It was actually area director at SEIU 10 to 1, which is county employees. And before that, I worked at the North Bay Labor Council, AFL-CIO, as the executive director. And gosh, before that, I worked for the California Faculty Association. I've worked for the ACLU of Northern California. Homeless Prenatal Project. I've been lucky. I've gotten to work for organizations that are working hard for justice.
Let me ask you something, Lisa. As you mention all these things, you've been very successful, you know, in many of your positions. I mean, I've noted over the years you've made a lot of strides for many of the unions that you've been involved with. Where do you get your courage, and what do you think your secret is?
You're so funny. Class resentment and rage. That's what drives me. No. You know, I think, you know, Elaine, as someone who grew up working class, so you talk about your dad and your mom, even from a really young age, and my parents were very active. My dad was originally a farm worker, and then my grandpa got him into the laborers union. He came here. He only had a third grade education. He had worked since he was really a kid in Mexico, and then came to Watsonville picking strawberries, picking fruit, picking mushrooms. And I saw as a very young kid that this whole myth about, you know, come to America, I mean, the people who work hard and you'll prosper. And I really realized, wow, I saw people who worked hard every day, all the time, and were not, you know, always able to get ahead. I noticed, though, that when my father got into the union and my mom was a teacher, she joined the teachers union, our family made a huge jump. And even though I've been, you know, working for justice all those years, I really feel like seeing the union, the labor movement, it's helped so many working class people come up. And I've seen it's been so great for people. And it bothered me to see the attacks on it from Reagan on down. And I'm really happy now that there's a resurgence of labor activism. There's great, like, movies and a lot more about organizing.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because oftentimes, especially, like, let's look at the women's movement, we forget what it took to get where we are. And people just take it for granted. And when you take something for granted, little by little, the powers that be have found a way to take it away from us. I really believe, when you mentioned Reagan, I really believe when they first had that,
Petco, the air controllers.
The air controllers, when he stopped that strike, I thought that was the beginning. That was the beginning of starting to deregulate it, start putting it down, start making it like, oh, government has to run everything. Well, you know, thank you so much for sharing that. And here you are now, you're working for the California Nurses Association. So now you're really involved with a group of majority of women. And how is that for you? And how is that different from, say, the SEIU?
It's awesome. I mean, I think that one of the things about unions is that they really do shorten the wage gap for women. There's still a gap, but I feel like when you're in a union, because of the equal pay is such a big issue. And to be sure, not every union has all of the equity that's needed. But, for example, I just met a woman from the Inland Boatmen's Union. She's the first you've got to get her on the show. She's amazing. She's the first president of the first female president of the Inland Boatmen's Union in over 100 years. It's awesome. She's an amazing woman.
What's the boatman? What?
The Inland Boatmen's Union. That's one of the maritime unions. It's an old union. But they do maritime. They do a lot with, working on the docks and bringing in stuff. And so, I mean, the labor union has really, from Dolores Huerta, there's been so many, Shirley Tanayuka, there have been so many labor women that have, you know, really made the way for the rest of us, right? There are women leading a lot of big unions, including Bonnie Castillo, who is running the California Nurses Association. And I love working for CNA because, like women, they're a very militant union. They're not afraid. They've taken on the Democrats when they are not supporting working class issues like Medicare for All. And I love that they fight for patient safety, patient advocacy, and for healthcare for all. That's kind of like one of the things I'm really, really, really proud of. I could never be a nurse. It's way too hard work. But I get to work with amazing women every day.
Well, you know, it's interesting, too. You know, when you look at the population, you start thinking about it. Most people say, oh, poo-poo on unions. And, you know, it's interesting that we forget that it was the movement, the labor movement, that created unions. And what union means really is to come together. It's a union of people. It's gathering. It's coming together. That's how I believe they got the name. And it helps better. You talk about the middle class. My family was somewhat middle class too. I mean, my father was a union man. It was regular time, double time, time and a half, you know, all these different things that what he said when he first started in the workforce that was not available to him. So what's going on in general? Like, here we are at Labor Day. You know, I believe this is, I didn't check to see what year, how many years we've done Labor Day, but I think it's been quite a while. What is going on today? I mean, why do you think, in your own words, why do you think there's such a resurgence around unions? And what give us two or three concrete examples of when unions achieve for people.
Well, I think that there's a resurgence partially because of these huge wage gaps and the wage stagnation that people are noticing, and that our country is divided between very, very obscenely wealthy, and then everybody else struggling to hang on and dropping. You know, the middle class, when we had the healthiest middle class, we had the largest union density, and that was the post-war. And there were a lot of jobs that were not well-paying jobs, for example, bus driving, factory working, but those jobs became well-paying jobs, sustainable jobs, jobs you could raise a family on and buy a home on when they became union. And we're seeing a lot of the same organizing going on now. There's organizing right now here in Sonoma at the Hyatt, where the the hotel workers are working on their contract, trying to get a first contract. And these were women who make up, do the hotel beds, take care of the Hyatt. And it's amazing the level. Working conditions are really the most important thing. Salary is great. Having health care for your kids is great. A pension is great. Everybody deserves those. But working conditions are important as well. And these women were getting injuries because they were being forced to do something like 25 rooms a day to clean. And, you know, you're lifting beds, you're vacuuming. It's really, really hard on your back, on your shoulders. And these women came together and, you know, joined the union and kind of pushed the Hyatt. So that's a huge campaign and locally.
But, you know, it's another example of what my father said. I never met a man who would give me a raise without a struggle. It's the same thing. Safety is a struggle, you know.
Yes.
I remember when I was working with an organization, I was actually the corporate sales manager, and we had a fire, only to discover, you know, that we didn't have a proper sprinkling system. Well, OSHA comes in. You know, OSHA was developed out of the, you know, that's the for public safety, for the safety in the workplace. And we had to make all these changes. But what were the changes? And I remember the owner complaining, and I said to him, I said, wait a minute, we got to improve the safety of these workers. I mean, you know, but he was complaining because he had to spend the money for the sprinkler system.
Right.
So it's interesting when you see all these different perks that unions have brought us.
Well, and not just perks for workers, but if you look at, for example, the California Nurses Association fought long and hard for patient-staff ratios. So right now,
right,
as a patient, you wouldn't know what's safe practice. If I go into a hospital and I need to get something done, I'm a consumer. I have no idea what they're going to do to me is cutting corners. But the nurses who in the CNA can speak up on behalf of patient advocacy, and they can say, that's not safe. You need two people to do this. You need three people to do this. And having ratios has been huge in California because it's kept a safety net for people so that when you're in a hospital, your nurse is supposed to have, you know, be able to do the safest practice and be able to do the kind of nursing that many of us, for example, if you're at Kaiser, where a lot of our nurses are, you paid in advance for it. And it's important that the nurse is able to do the kind of nursing. And unfortunately, right now, healthcare is a business. And so they're going to try to cut corners. And the nurses don't let them do that. And that's why we fought for ratios.
Well, I'm alive today because of nurses.
Yeah.
I never really knew on a real personal level how important a nurse is and the difference between what a good nurse is. I mean, it was enlightening. Well, we talked a lot about Labor Day, and is there anything, we're coming to the end of the segment, anything, I know that there's this wonderful, I'm looking at this flyer, it says Fall Labor School, brought to you by the North Bay Labor Council and Labor and Community Studies and the City College of San Francisco. Boy, this looks interesting. So
yeah,
this
is great about labor history, and it's also about organizing for people who are interested in that. So I'll give you one. You can put it on the KBBF website if people have questions.
Oh, we'll put it on our website.
Oh, terrific, And then people can call the Labor Council at 545-6970 if they're interested and just mention labor schools. I also want to, before I go, thank you very much for inviting me on to be with Barbara and the environmental organization, because we have a very strong blue-green alliance up here. Labor and the environment are a huge coalition. I know we work with the Sonoma County Conservation Action. We work with a lot of different groups, partially because you know, we all care about our environment. We all care about environmental racism, issues of inequality in parks. And working class people and working people use the public parks, are tired of having the environment degraded as well. And that's, I'm glad you played Bread and Roses, because to us that's like the epitome of why we need to work in coalition with the environmentalists, is because work is important and money is important, but roses and beauty and our environment are important too.
Very important.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, but this fall labor, where is this going to be held?
It's going to be held at a couple of different places. So at the Plumbers Union mostly, I believe, which is down on Plumbers Union is down on Santa Rosa Avenue.
So could someone like me go?
Oh, yeah. You sign up for the class.
Oh, no.
It's
this sounds fascinating.
Labor history and organizing. So I think they're really great. And, again, if people are interested in this 12-week class, it's called the Labor Council at 545-6970.
And the class is going to start September 26th. It's going to be happening on Wednesdays from 6 to 9. And I think that's really, really important. Well, Lisa Maldonado, any last words, your website, anything else you'd like to cover?
No, no, no. Just thank you again for having me. Happy Labor Day to all my brothers and sisters and everybody who works out there. And, you know, thanks again. I'm happy to come back and celebrate working class with you.
I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. You're just wonderful. You really are. You know, it's an amazing thing doing a radio show, because you get the opportunity to meet so many wonderful people and to bring them on the air to inspire and encourage. And, you know, Lisa Maldonado definitely inspires me. I love her thugness. Anyway, I have one or two announcements before we go into a musical break. I want to remind people that this Saturday, September 8th, from 12:30 to 6 o'clock, is going to be the Peace and Justice Concert in the Hub. It's going to be at the La Plaza Park in downtown Cotati. I would encourage you to go and attend. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And then there's something very, very special happening in Petaluma on Saturday, September 15th, from noon to 6 p.m., The Petaluma Blacks are going to have an annual picnic and community outreach. It's going to be from noon to 6, and it's going to be at McNair Park in Petaluma and sponsored by the Petaluma Blacks for Community Development. And if you want to get some more information, call Gloria Robinson at 762-7744 at area code 707. And one last thing. Oh, my God, Santa Rosa is celebrating 150 years on September 8th from 3 to 10 in Courthouse Square. And I have a little secret for you. Ken is going to be there with his Tai Chi group, and he's going to be doing a demonstration, and I'm really excited about seeing that. Anyway, we are going to take a musical break. Oh, I'll tell you something. I love talking about the union, and I love talking about the environment, because I feel that we're educating and getting people to think about these very important things. Well, we're going to take a musical break, and the song I will be playing is one of my favorites. It's called The Circle of Life. And just to remind us that we're all part of this planet. We all live in this great, great, great mystery. I mean, I was looking at the sky last night and I was thinking to myself, where am I? Well, I'm on Earth, and it's just a beautiful place to be, but we have to start taking care of it a little bit better. So we're going to play the song The Circle of Life, sung by Carmen Twilley and Lebo M. And when we come back, I will be talking with climate activist and volunteer co-leader of Citizens Climate Lobby in the Santa Rosa chapter, Barbara Moulton.
What about sunrise? What about rain? What about all the things that you said we were to gain? What about killing fields? Is there a time? What about all the things that you said was yours and mine? Did you ever stop to notice? Ooh.
my question. Why? Why are they denying what's real? I mean, it's amazing to me. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my next guest, Barbara Moulton. Barbara, welcome. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
It's wonderful to be back with you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, just here we are, Labor Day. I mean, it's just wonderful having Lisa on. I mean, she's just so inspirational. You know, you get my energy goes up when I'm around her. Anyway, I'd like to tell my listeners a little bit about you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Well, Barbara Moulton is a climate activist and volunteer co-leader of Citizens Climate Library in the Santa Rosa chapter. Her first career in law was followed by years of activism and single parenting. So are you a lawyer or what?
Not anymore. I left law more than a quarter century ago. So
you
don't
actually were a lawyer?
I actually was a lawyer practicing in San Francisco.
God, that is amazing. The little things we find out about each other. More recently, she served on the Sonoma County Bicycle Coalition for a couple of years and has served on the Santa Rosa Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Board since 2009. Working in cycling advocacy led to the unavoidable conclusion that while individual actions are important, something much bigger and system-wide is needed to address climate change. In 2013, Barbara and her husband discovered Citizens Climate Lobby, which is working towards raising carbon-free and dividend? What is that?
Passing, carbon-free and dividend legislation at the national level. We can talk more about that soon, I hope.
And she's happy to report that there's real progress. Well, what is that? What is that a little bit?
The carbon fee and dividend is a proposal to place a steadily rising fee on greenhouse gas emitting fuels at the source, right at the top of the economy, where it sprinkles down through the economy, and returning all of the revenue to people as a dividend. Turns out that people will, poor people, low income people, and middle income people will come out ahead. Get more back in their dividends every month than the increasing prices of things as we factor in the real costs of using fossil fuels. So it ends up boosting the economy at the same time as it moves the economy away from fossil fuels very quickly.
You know, it's really interesting. Here I am, kind of a journalist. You know, here we are on the radio, and I never heard of this, which in a way needs to have a little bit more information on that. You know, it's interesting. So thank you for answering that question. You know, before we start, Barbara, one of the things about Women's Spaces, it's dedicated to ordinary women like yourself doing extraordinary things. You know, you go out in the community and you're making changes. I mean, you've helped improve our bicycle safety all through the county. I mean, we have to credit you for that and your organization.
You.
So, you know, it's the individual person. But what was your beginning? What was the first thing that kind of sparked you that says, I've got to get involved?
Oh, gosh. Way back in the late 60s. Well, in the 60s, I was involved in civil rights. Got a cross burned in my backyard, and I wasn't living in the South. I was too young and foolish to be scared. You know, moving along, I started to see that nothing seemed to be happening in Congress. The only people having power in Congress seemed to be lawyers. That's why I did the law thing. But now, fortunately, that's changed. It's much more wide open to people. I was a founding member of Democratic Socialists of America. And then life has just carried me along, and I've worked on individual things, like you said, of the Bicycle Coalition, which is great. Bicycles are a wonderful, freeing way to move around the world. But system-wide action is needed, and climate change is so big. It's on us. And I want to just say something. A headline I saw today, climate change is about to transform Earth into an unrecognizable alien landscape. We have been ignoring it at our peril. It is like a hurricane bearing down on us. We can see it's coming. We can see it's going to be really big. And now we're just getting the leading edges have made landfall. We've seen it in all those horrible hurricanes last year, the fires last year. And we haven't even recovered from those. And we've got new ones upon us now. It's going to overwhelm us.
Well, you know, what's so interesting when you say this, you know, it just gives me a chill because I know, I mean, we were just involved. I mean, we were, what, a mile and a half from Coffee Park. I mean, we didn't know where we were going. It was, and all of a sudden to see your whole city's on fire. I mean, I had never in my whole life, I mean, all I could do is relate like a war zone, like people that are at war, you know, because all of a sudden we didn't know whether we were going to lose our home or we had friends that lost homes, all these different things that happened. And yet on the air, I never heard it mentioned except for the alternative radio. Not one word about climate change, not one word about, you know, global warming, nothing, you know. And I, why do you think there's so much ignorance? I mean, what is going on?
Well, you know, I prefer to look at what's going on that's working. And I have to give the Press Democrat a lot of credit. They have made climate one of their central issues. Paul Gullickson had it right up there on their as something they wanted to cover a lot before he moved on, and I think they're still doing it. They no longer refer to climate change as a theory in the articles. They refer to it as, oh, with climate change, this is happening, this is happening. They know it's fact, and they're laying it out as fact. So I think that slowly the press is moving, and we have to encourage them. And by that's all of us. That's where activism comes in.
But, you know, the one question I always have, and maybe in your travels, and then there's a few other things I want us to cover before we've been, you know. But the thing is, I don't understand how people, they see things in front of them happening, how they deny it. I mean, it's so interesting to me. Our government, I mean, even our president, he never talks about anything about that this is created by climate change.
You know, people seem to be really tied to their tribes, and what the people around you say and believe really affects what you believe. So I think that breaking down those barriers between the tribes is very important. I went on the web recently and I was looking up somebody on the right, you know, and I saw what they had to say about people on the left. Boy, it was kind of a mirror image of what the left says about the right. And I think we have to really work to kind of tone down the rhetoric and look at people and their proposals and take people seriously and respectfully. And that's what's happening in Congress. You don't see it in the news because this isn't the inflammatory news that makes headlines. But we're getting a bipartisan dialogue on climate now, which you didn't see 3 years ago. Now we have the Climate Solutions Caucus, which in fall of 2016 had maybe 8 or 10 Republicans on it. Now they're 43.
Oh, wow.
I mean, there's real movement.
That's the good news.
There's lots of good news. A carbon tax measure was introduced by a Republican a month ago. Unheard of in the last decade, anyway. You know, a decade ago, Republicans knew that climate change was real, and then all of a sudden they had to back off of that for political reasons, which I don't know whether... Let's not go into that.
The good news is what you're saying is because there's so much grassroots action, because we have to go back to the cause, you know, because we've been on the streets for a long time over this. Because of that, what's happening is there is kind of movement. And what is happening is we're not hearing about it. But, you know, one of the things that I would like to encourage you to do, if you hear about things, just let me know because I'm happy to put it on the air. We can at least announce it here if we know something is happening. Because who knew that these legislations were being presented?
No, it's really quite wonderful. Now, I do want to tell you, in your upcoming events, there's the Global Climate Action Summit, which is happening in San Francisco. It's a big thing. Jerry Brown is hosting it, but people from all over the world, I mean, major climate leaders will be here in San Francisco from September 12th to 14th, I think are the dates. Citizens Climate Lobby has affiliate events on the 13th. And I hope people will look them up and participate. Some of them you can do online, and a lot of them you can just go to.
Well, there's also going to be, it sounds here, there's going to be something, Climate Jobs and Justice, the biggest climate march in the West Coast.
Why, that's next Saturday.
That's going to be happening Saturday, September 8th from 10 to 3 p.m. at the Embarcadero Plaza to City Hall Plaza in San Francisco.
And there are a lot of buses going from here, so people should sign up for the buses right now.
Okay, where can they sign up with
buses? 350 Bay Area is one source, and another is the NBOP, North Bay Organizing Project, also is organizing buses. I think NBOP has a few free seats left, so on their buses. So there are multiple ways to get there.
Well, let me tell the folks that are listening, if you go on Women's Spaces, I'm going to get all the information. I'll get a hold of NW. I'll get a hold of the organizers. I'll get a hold of Susan Shaw, and we'll find out when the buses are leaving. Everything will be on Women's Spaces at www.womenspaces.com. And I'll talk to KBBF to maybe we can put something up there. But this sounds like a very – and then after this march – then they're going to have the summit. Talk a little bit about the summit. What is the purpose? Do you have an idea?
Well, I think the purpose is to move forward, to move action forward in the absence of U.S. national action. The world is going ahead without us. And so I think that's what the overarching goal of this summit is. Citizens Climate Lobby is presenting a number of events, one of which is the business case for a carbon tax. Which is interesting because there's people across the spectrum politically agree that putting a price on carbon is the cheapest, most effective, most powerful way to move the economy away from fossil fuels and the least disruptive. So that's widely agreed upon by both economists and politicians from across the spectrum.
How do you feel something like that happens with all the resistance that's coming from some of the, you know, I mean, who's even heading the EPA now?
That's a good question. I've forgotten his name. But the way the change happens is you build support at the grassroots level and the grass tops level. In Florida, as soon as a Republican congressman there, Carlos Cabrillo, knew, thanks to our work and the work of some other organizations, that the public would support him, that he wasn't going to get outed in his next primary by some more denier-type Republican. When he knew he had the votes to stay in office, he came out and started the Climate Solutions Caucus and joined the Republican resolution acknowledging climate change was real, human-caused, and needs a solution. That happens when you build the support on the local level when they know that the votes want them to act on this and that it's a priority, then they can act.
Well, I'm going to ask you another question that I know, you know, maybe it's to, really to encourage, again, the listeners to get involved. There's so much, sometimes it's disappointing news. How do you handle the disappointment? I mean, how do people handle when they hear, when they try and they work so hard and then all of a sudden they find it didn't work out? How do you keep going? Where do you get it, so to speak?
Well, I try not to pay a whole lot of attention to the failures. If you look at, you know, it's like, where do you go? You tend to go where you're looking. If you're riding a bicycle and you look at a rock in the road, you 9 times out of 10 you'll hit that rock. But if you look at where you want to go and focus on that and keep working there, we're not denying that things are really tough right now. There's a lot of bad news. But that's one of the things I love about Citizens Climate Lobby. We're focused on how we can move forward, and our way of moving forward is by building relationships. We build relationships based on respect. So I'm learning to see where I might have common ground with people that I thought I disagreed with. So it's a liberating and spiritual practice, I have to say.
No, but that's very, very good. I mean, in my mind, that's a very strong answer, is that what you do is you know that there's this, you know there's negativity, you know there's issues, but you're moving forward. You've got, you know, there's this song, the civil rights song. It reminds me of keep your eye on the prize.
Absolutely.
Keep your eye on the prize. You know, don't go over here. You know, don't, because if you go over here, I mean, you're going to get discouraged. But here you'll get encouraged if you keep your eye, keep moving, and keep holding hands of other people. That was the story I told about the family that helped me. That was the most amazing part of it, was he put his hand out.
Yeah.
That's what I saw. That was the first thing I saw, was his hand. And then I heard, let me help you. It was that hand, you know. And there's no substitute for people joining, people helping, people guiding each other along the way. I mean, it's just amazing. Well, go a little bit deeper into this carbon fee and dividend legislation. Well, what would it look like? I mean, here you are, a company. How do they enact something like that?
Well, so the proposal is to put the fee as close to the wellhead or the mine or the port of entry as possible, so that the companies that are pulling oil out of the ground, for example, when they put that product into the economy, that's where they pay the tax. And it's a relatively small number of sources. It's maybe in the 10,000s rather than the hundreds of thousands or millions if we go to, down to the individual business level. So it's a you start up at the top, and then you that's where the fee is imposed. They pass that cost along to their customers. So whoever buys those fossil fuels is going to start to see those prices rise. They'll factor that into their products, and they'll factor it into their purchasing. So, for example, UPS. They'll see that, that fossil fuel powered vehicles will start to cost them more, and that in 5 years maybe as this fee rises, it'll make a lot of sense if they've already invested in a fleet that is not dependent on fossil fuels, on electric vehicles or, you know, reducing.
Do you see companies starting to move in that direction already?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the things, well, you see it happening, and I have the better example, which is not directly carbon fee and dividend, but when Obama's legislation or regulation on the Clean Power Plan, that one, even just announcing it, we started moving away from coal, and states started taking action. So it's having that predictability that something is going to change, and it's going to make economic sense for you to move. Now, do you remember when there was a huge price spike in gas maybe a decade ago, and all of a sudden you couldn't give away a Ford Explorer?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, people respond to price very quickly, even, you know, individual consumers, but especially business. So there have been economic models of this, and it comes out even better than we had hoped in terms of moving us away from fossil fuels and stimulating the economy.
Well, what are some of the things right now? We're coming to the end of our segment. Is there any last thought, any last words? How about websites, how they can get a hold of you?
Well, I do join Citizens Climate Lobby. CitizensClimateLobby.org is the easy way to go. But people can also, you know, contact me. I'm Barbara Moulton, barbara.ccl@sonic.net. And join us. We have monthly meetings. We'd love to have you. We do work here in the county. And we welcome everybody. In fact, you know, if you know any conservatives, bring them with you. We need this to be a broad dialogue. To get the solution at speed and scale that we need a broad coalition. We have to work across the aisle in Congress. We have to work with everybody.
Well, it's going to take the people. I mean, the Constitution says we the people, you know, and that's very important. Let's see, your shirt says, of the people, by the people, for the planet. Oh, my God, that's beautiful. Of the people, by the people, for the planet. Is that kind of the theme on the summit?
At the march next week, yes.
Well, I encourage folks, I encourage you to please check this out and give us our the climate your
Citizens,
website one more time.
CitizensClimateLobby.org.
Well, thank you, Barbara.
Thank
Moulton.
You. Thank you so much for having
this
me.
This has been wonderful and so informative. I mean, you actually gave us a little bit of lift, you know, because we know now some good things are going on and there's good people out there. Yeah. Well, that's it for our show, folks. I want to thank Lisa Maldonado, Labor Relations Representative of the California Nurses Association. She's my honored guest every Labor Day, and I just love her. And thank you so much, Lisa. And Barbara Moulton, who is a climate activist and volunteer co-leader of the Citizens Climate Lobby and the Santa Rosa chapter, for being such great guests. And I want to remind you folks, of course, about the march that's going on in San Francisco that you make sure is happening on September 8th and down at the Embarcadero. And everything is on our website at www.womenspaces.com. You all have everything listed, everything, all the race, all the marches, and all the different things that are going on. Well, folks, a reminder, tell your friends that Women's Spaces will be aired again at 11 p.m. this evening. I'm so excited. I get to listen to my own program. Also, I'm available for speaking engagements. And if you have any announcements you'd like to have on the air, do not hesitate to let me know, like someone had an anniversary or birthday, a birth, anything that's going on in our Northern California community. Remember, folks, our children are the future. You know, that's what this whole climate issue that we've been talking about, labor unions, that's what we're talking about, we're carving out a future for our children. Well, this is Elaine B. Holtz, and you've been listening to Women's Spaces. I want to thank you so much for listening. I want to encourage you to go on my website on www.womenspaces. I have all my shows archived. I want to remind folks this is September 3rd. The Sonoma County Gazette is on the street. I also write for the Santa Rosa Snippets. And there's a wonderful, every county in this community has a column in that article, in that paper. So pick it up. And again, this is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening. And I look forward to being with you the next time.
Because a woman in your life, and a woman in your life, and a woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, September 3rd, 2018.